The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that silently spread, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Welcome back. Top of the second hour of today's National Intel Report, this Tuesday, December 26, 2017. I am your guest host again, Chris Hinckley, sitting in for John Stadmiller. I'm the regular host of Road Warrior Radio here on Republic Broadcasting Network. And we're, I don't know, talking about some high-level stuff, I guess, George and Texas. We're going to have to go back to the phone lines here in a second, but it's a good question. You know, the etymology of the term Palestine, especially since it's curiously absent from a number of biblical translations. Good call on that. And we, you know, I am the first to say we need to define terms. So that's one that I've curiously missed. I know that Webster's 1828 dictionary doesn't seem to include the word Palestine, which is provocative, I would say. So there's more on that. Definitely something to read up on. I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert on that term. I should be. So that's back to the books for me, as far as that's concerned. Back to the previous issue real quick, and hopefully this doesn't take us too far off track, but the administrative state, it is a thing, a scourge that affects every American. Because again, as Senator Pat McCarran put it on the Senate floor in 1946, the Administrative Procedure Act is a Bill of Rights for the hundreds of thousands of Americans whose affairs — it was hundreds of thousands at that time, apparently. I mean, think about it. You go back 100 years, what part of the federal government touched the citizen? The post office, which is now the Postal Service. Everything's a contrivance, a counterfeit. The state of Israel is not the biblical Israel. The Stephen Schwartz, Two Faces of Islam, this political Islam, Wahhabi, Salafi, Diobandi ideology is not the same as, you know, the more mainline orthodoxy of Sunni and Shia Islam, for example. And there are other counterparts to that, but we see counterfeits all over the place. And so this administrative thing, it masquerades as the three duly constituted branches, but it's not them. So the last few things that I mentioned in replying to this are one from the Wikipedia entry for Fourth Branch of Government. There's actually a Wikipedia entry for this. And under the section titled Administrative Agencies, getting back to the Twitter user Steph's point, Even Wikipedia acknowledges the administrative agencies that are funded from public money may exercise powers granted by Congress without appropriate controls and oversight. This practice may result in a bureaucracy in the original literal sense, parenthetically. Some critics have argued that a central paradox at the heart of the American political system is democracy's reliance on what the critics view as undemocratic bureaucratic institutions that characterize the administrative agencies of government. An argument made for calling administrative agencies a fourth branch of government is the fact that such agencies typically exercise all three constitutionally divided powers within a single bureaucratic body, or as Gary Lawson put it in 1994 in The Rise and Rise of the Administrative State, and R.J. Pistrito echoed in The Birth of the Administrative State, sometimes even in the same person within that body. That is, agencies legislate, a power vested solely in the legislature by the Constitution, through delegated rulemaking authority. Again, Ralph Winterode is the subject matter expert on this network. Investigate, execute, and enforce such rules via the executive power these agencies are typically organized under, and apply, interpret, and enforce compliance with such rules, a power separately vested in the judicial branch. Additionally, non-executive or independent administrative agencies are often called a fourth branch of government as they create rules with the effect of law. Remember, they promulgate substantive rules of conduct presumed to have the force and effect of law, which means what? Again, Orwellian sophisms come to mind. Yet may be comprised at least partially of private non-governmental actors. See, what does all of that mean? Why do we have actors in government? I know that Capitol Hill is the Hollywood for ugly people, but I digress. You know, the point is, this is a problem. It's a clear violation of the checks and balances, the separation of powers that our duly constituted republic, you know, on which it was founded. Couple of other points. The Federal Reserve admits it's not federal, not reserve. The St. Louis, I mean, I've talked in the past about how the Federal Reserve admits that the FRNs it counterfeits, I would say, have no value. They have no value. What? How do you purchase things with them? They have purchasing power. Again, there's a difference. Purchasing power is the form of value, but not substance. And incidentally, it's weird that we're advocating buying money. The Constitution says gold and silver are money. Why would you buy money? That's redundant, right? But again, I digress. So if you go to the St. Louis Fed's website under their Making Sense of the Federal Reserve series, they have an entry titled Who Owns Reserve Banks? Here are words lifted from that page today. The Federal Reserve Banks are not a part of the federal government. Again, this is the St. Louis Fed website. And by the way, it's stlouisfed.org, which should tell you something. Federal Reserve Banks are not a part of the federal government. Skipping ahead, the Federal Reserve Banks are set up like private corporations. Huh? Oh, so fascism. Got it. Okay. Got it. And incidentally, I mentioned on my broadcast this morning, I thought it was interesting that Brian Kilmeade at Fox News has a book about Andrew Jackson, and they ran a series. Now they have a special, Brian Kilmeade talking about Andrew Jackson, and they failed to mention his 1837 farewell address. According to Andrew Jackson himself, one of, if not the crowning achievements of his life, was killing the bank, so to speak, what we call the Federal Reserve today. One of Jackson's crowning achievements was vetoing the renewal of the charter of the Second Central Bank of the United States. And he talked at length about that in his 1837 farewell address. How can you not acknowledge that? It's a curious oversight, don't you think? Continuing, two other nuggets. Another Heritage piece. I mentioned Pistrito's Birth of the Administrative State. Elizabeth Slattery wrote a piece back in 2015 titled, Who Will Regulate the Regulators? He's custodiat ipsos custodis in the Latin, sort of, you know, who will guard the guards themselves, who will regulate the regulators, administrative agencies, the separation of powers, and Chevron deference, which is a great piece on that. And finally, for those who don't know, there's a great piece from Speaker Paul Ryan's office last July titled, "It's Time to Dismantle the Fourth Branch," which I think is fantastic and should be widely circulated. It's pretty self-explanatory in its title, I would say. It's Time to Dismantle the Fourth Branch. I like that title. I think it's a great idea. And with it, the UN and all of these other awful extra-constitutional constructs that we are being plagued by. But again, I digress. Let's go back to the phone and grab Charles in St. Petersburg. Charles, thanks for calling. Welcome.
How you doing there?
Good, Charles.
Yeah, you mentioned Sykes-Picot treaty that shows really who ran the world up to World War II, you know, when the United States took over. A friend of mine, though, was Lebanese-American, Habib Skaf, and he was alive in the 30s. He was his company had drilling rights in Saudi Arabia, special rights under King Faisal to drill water. He and his nephews, and he was telling me about what it was like in the 30s. He said the United States took its orders from Britain and France. And that's what the Sykes-Picot Treaty shows. Before the
exactly.
First World War, there were four people originally in the Sykes-Picot Treaty, Tsarist Russia and Italy. And during the First World War, those two powers were taken out, and there was left only with the British Empire and the French Empire to divvy up Europe, balkanize Germany. Germany was hated since the 1870s as a rival to England, along with the United States, but the United States was by that time being absorbed into the British Empire.
Yep.
And, you know, as a junior partner, you know, thanks to the Ruskins, John Ruskin's pupils, it became the Royal Institute of International Affairs, the round table. Have you ever heard of Marmaduke Pickthall, the Oriental writer that translated the Koran? Yeah, I had one of his books that was published before the First World War. It demonstrated how Palestinians, whether they were Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, were very, very similar to each other. They had very similar beliefs, you know, the green one, El Hidra, in Muslim belief was identified with Saint George, or, you know, in Christian Palestinians, or the Jews, Elijah, you know, they were very, very similar, and this was a time when Zionism was just beginning, and the people there got along under the Turkish Empire. I think the last Sultan of Turkey was a very progressive person, the Red Sultan.
Yeah.
A lot of people talk about the Young Turks, but they forget that was a Grand Orient Freemason and Jewish bunch of radicals that were allied themselves with Lenin's Russia. They were they had nothing to do with the old sultanate, you know, which wasn't that bad. Just like the Tsar of Russia was very, very progressive in a lot of ways, you know,
Tsar Nicholas, you're talking about?
Tsar Nicholas, yeah, and then the Kaiser. The Kaiser didn't even want to be involved in the First World War. You know, Austria was the one that involved him. You know, and he I guess he thought it was a sense of honor to it with them, and he was just being set up to be destroyed, you know, to be balkanized, Germans, or along with the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Well,
exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a while.
Yeah, wait, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you asked me about Marmaduke Pickthall, and it's been a while since I have come across his writing and writing about him. But I think, as I recall, one of the most provocative entries that's a short read is an article published back in 2014 titled "The British Face of Islam," which I think is helpful and includes the aspect of Wahhabism, which I think is essential. The way that the article puts it, Salafi and Wahhabi groups are often described in public rhetoric as radical groups, and indeed their religious beliefs and practices often take a literalist standpoint, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point that I'm drawing here is what I said before. Basically, in simple terms, and this is a fact of history that is largely occluded, the British, what Quigley called the Anglophile network, from not long after the founding of the American Republic, were using, actually around that time and forward, were using this virus, this social virus, I call it, of Wahhabism and Salafism to fracture or to balkanize regions, most notably the Ottoman Empire. And, you know,
right.
Today we have the term balkanization.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
Go ahead.
I've read that that Wahhabism goes back is actually a plan of the British East India Company, and which is really ran the empire and intelligence. Did you know that Lahu Yale, that Yale University is named after, was the second head of the British Empire in the 1600s. They already were already in India at the same time. Yale's family was settling Connecticut.
Not surprised. Yes. I wasn't aware of that, I don't think, but no, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, no wonder Yale University is the Illuminati University, where Skull and Bones was. Jedediah Morse in 1790 said the branch of the Illuminati was right there at Yale University, and it's been the CIA University. But it goes back further than we think it does.
Absolutely.
Just look up Elihu Yale and his relationship with all the Pierpont family, the mm-hmm. Morgans, and all these family, this is the 1630s, the 1620s.
Yeah.
Maybe they were already involved in opium then. People
well,
say it was later. You know, the British Empire is really the British East India Company. Its intelligence agency was the British East India Company, not the Queen as such. And we have an American origin for it. I mean, from Connecticut.
Yeah.
IU Yale. Oh, anyway, I didn't mean to digress.
Excuse me, I'm fighting a scratchy throat, a frog. Yeah, this is all important history, and again, largely occluded, but I just wanted to kind of emphasize the point that the British face of Islam, so to speak, promotes the proxy of Wahhabism and Salafism as a social virus, as a way to, you know, manifest Ordo Ab Kahl. I mean, they go create the Kahl with the Wahhabi social virus. And for those who don't know, those are the people, when people start talking about Sharia law and, you know, the head choppers and the women must dress this way and can't have any rights and all that kind of. That's Wahhabism,
right,
almost
that's
exclusively.
The British.
Yeah, and
that's the British behind the scenes.
Right. Exactly.
And John
and it's Philby, a way to
Kim Philby's father. He was an advisor to the king, the original Saudi Arabian king. He thought they were totally degenerate. You know, St. John Philby or St. John Philby. So Kim Philby, who was one of the powers in British intelligence, and he was named after the character in Kim in Kipling's story, the young kid. I if it's the movie, keep in mind this in Masonry. Keep in mind Kim Philby. He met Kim in the what's his name? Kipling's story.
Rudyard?
The movie. Rudyard Kipling's story, which is namely, which is about spies, too, the great game. I don't know if you've read anything about that, about the occult connection with Richard Deacon, the English writer, occult connection with the spy business.
Yeah.
Oh, well, in Egypt, what is it, the Muslim Brotherhood? Did you know that that's connected to Freemasonry? It's supposed to be a, it's really, the Muslims are anti-Mason, they're very suspicious, but something like the Muslim Brotherhood would be a good front for British intelligence and...
Well, it's the same. It's the same thing. If you you go back, a number of folks have spoken. That's kind of it's a derivation of the same Wahhabi and Salafi Islamist philosophy, Qutubism, and. I mean, even if you go to the Wikipedia entry, for example, on Muslim Brotherhood, you see these words, prominent figures. While there have been many breakaway groups from the movement, prominent figures of the Brotherhood include Sayyid Qutub, highly influential and anti-Semitic thinker of Islamic supremacism. And this is, skipping ahead, it says Osama bin Laden criticized the Brotherhood and accused it of betraying jihad and the ideals of Qutub. So, bin Laden was allegedly a Qutubist. And
who was?
This is.
I'm sorry.
What's that?
The founder of the Muslim Brotherhood. I'm sorry, I lost it. Excuse me. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
One of the instrumental figures in the Muslim Brotherhood was Sayyid Qutub, and this ideology of Qutubism, which ties back again to the he was kind of like. Sayyid Qutub was the Marxist infiltrator of the Islamic era, so to speak, the 20th century Islamic era. So from the Wikipedia entry for Sayyid Qutub, under the section titled Returning to Egypt, Qutub concluded that major aspects of American life were primitive and shocking. He saw Americans as numb to faith and religion, faith and art, etc., etc. His experience in the U.S. is believed to have formed in part the impetus for his rejection of Western values and his moves toward Islamism, which is what? Upon returning to Egypt, resigning from civil service, he joined the Muslim Brotherhood in the early 1950s and became editor-in-chief of the Brothers Weekly newsletter and later head of its propaganda section, as well as an appointed member of the working committee of its guidance council. He's a very influential and radical figure in the Muslim Brotherhood.
Was so he a it's Grand that Orient Freemason or
probably I don't know that to be a fact, but I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's the same.
Like Yellen Church or something.
Yeah, he's a Western educated guy. You know, kind of like Bin Laden, who you know goes to the school of what is it, King Abdulaziz School of Economics and Management, I want to say, and is recruited by the CIA. You know, and it's really kind of a Western-oriented, a British-oriented school, and he goes from there, kind of like the London School of Economics kind of thing, goes from there, and, you know, the CIA gives him a couple hundred million bucks.
Yeah. And Bin Laden just looked like a Westerner. Michael Hoffman, in one of his publications years ago, Michael Hoffman II had a picture of Bin Laden, you know, and he just looked like a regular Westerner, you know, no beard, nothing. And then suddenly he sprouts his beard, and he looks like an old-time sheikh.
Right.
His family are multi-billionaires in Saudi Arabia, weren't they? They still are.
Yeah. You know, as far as all of this conversation is concerned, I think I would direct the audience for a more comprehensive, a fascinating and comprehensive study of the subject matter. I would direct folks to James Corbett's How and Why Big Oil Conquered the World, How Big Oil Conquered the World, and Why Big Oil Conquered the World. And if you go to Corbett Report, for those who don't know, Corbett with two T's, Corbett Report.com/Big Oil, you can find both of those parts in the two-part series, How and Why Big Oil Conquered the World. You'll find a great deal of this backstory and a whole lot more. For example, did folks know that in America, 100 years ago, 90 years ago, electric power was becoming a kind of predominant form of power for transportation, certainly public transportation? I think most people know that.
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
But James does a good job in that series of talking about the backstory of the Bin Laden family and the deep ties, and specifically, you know, the deep ties to the Bush family, for example, in the run-up to 9/11 and afterward, and the intrigue and things that are at work there. It's a great he did the videos, and for anybody who knows James' work, the hyperlink transcripts for the videos are included, which is it's just incredible. I don't know how he manages to do it, but it's fantastic stuff. It should be essential watching and reading for every American, I think. It's a real mind changer, that's for sure. It's history that you didn't know, I guarantee it. I mean, for example, who knows who Dr. Devil Bill Livingston was? Most people don't.
The African explorer?
Devil Bill Livingston was John D. Rockefeller's dad.
No, I didn't know that. I thought it was Doc Rockefeller was the medicine man.
Exactly.
And John D. was his son,
Doc Rockefeller was Devil Bill Livingston. Yeah, it's a very interesting story, and the way that James tells the story is absolutely fascinating, and you understand why he lays that groundwork in that context for the rest of the story. It makes perfect sense. Anyway, I recommend it, folks. Go check it out at corporatereport.com.
To the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Oh, Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Must be some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine, plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth.
Hey. Welcome back. Interesting stuff. Interesting conversation. Charles, I appreciate it. And just so folks know, again, I would point folks to James Corbett's How and Why Big Oil Conquered the World, CorbettReport.com/Big Oil. Go watch them. Go read them. Interesting stuff. And this is, you know, there's kind of some crossover here. It's my understanding, speaking of the Muslim Brotherhood, Hassan al-Banna and Syed Qutb were British agents, I'll call them. It's my understanding, you know, in the same fashion that Bin Laden was a CIA recruit, you know, but that's a fact that's largely occluded from history. And even the Wikipedia entry for the CIA's Operation Cyclone sort of tries to downplay that, but that's no surprise since Wikipedia is the whitewashed, sanitized version of everything. But there are some interesting you know, again, this kind of gets back to what I was saying about when you mentioned Marmaduke Pickthall. Same kind of thing. You know, you find British intrigue, you find British fingerprints on all of this. You know, the Wahhabi, Salafi, Deobandi social virus throughout the Middle East and really now spreading around the world, as Garrett Coleman puts it, Wahhabizing the world, which I think is a brilliant way to put it. And, you know, the two things, it's interesting. Again, Pike's letter to Mazzini cannot be overstated, cannot be overemphasized. Pitting Zionism against political Islam. The two sound bites, speaking of Garrett Coleman, that I think are brilliant that he has, I don't know, coined maybe, are Wahhabizing the West now. The Middle East has been Wahhabized and Balkanized as a result of this Wahhabi social virus. Those are the people that come in and tip everything over in society, metaphorically speaking, sometimes literally, and say, hey, we're going to change all of this. We want to establish a caliphate here, there, everywhere. And in, what do you call it? A dialectic fashion, the problem is created. You know, where does this guy, Hassan al-Banna, come from? And all of a sudden there's a problem. You know, he says, I have a problem with these pro-Western interests. Well, wait a second, you're the Western educated guy, same as Saeed Qutb. Why are you basically, it's kind of like Californians migrating to another part of the country and saying, I have a problem with Californiaism. It's kind of, you know, how that looks. So they come back, they manufacture problems, which clearly kind of makes them seem like they're an agent of what Carol Quigley called the Anglophile network. And these same sorts of problems, just nuanced in nature. You know, the differences are nuanced, whether Wahhabi, specifically Salafi, Deobandi, but they're used to infect societies and turn them upside down so that you can redefine borders and people groups and get people fighting against each other to both serve that interest and keep them distracted at the same time. So the Wahhabizing now of the West is a brilliant way to put it, as Garrett Coleman did. And then the Gazification of the world is another brilliant soundbite, because that is what's happening. If we look around, for example, in America, and this is sort of a tangent, but those two forces are the forces that are being pitted against one another, not directly, but indirectly, and the whole world is being sucked into that. When you get a sense of that picture, then it becomes very clear, and you see it in the headlines every day. It's inescapable. So to your point, Charles, I think that though I can't prove it, Hassan al-Banna and Saeed Qutb were both British agents. I think I've read that of Qutb somewhere. I'm not positive on Hassan al-Banna, but I'm sure that it's floating around somewhere. Again, these are things that are largely occluded from history. You'll find allusions to British interest in Wahhabi and Salafi pursuits, and as you said, British agents working with Wahhabi radicals in the same fashion that the CIA recruited the Mujahideen. And as Robin Cook mentioned in his epic article in The Guardian, the day after the London 7/7 bombings, July 8th, 2005, the article titled "The Struggle Against Terrorism Cannot Be Won by Military Means." The title says it all. But he mentioned that the way he put it, Al-Qaeda, literally the database, was originally the computer file of the thousands of Mujahideen who were recruited and trained with help from the CIA to defeat the Russians. In the same fashion, the CIA, you know, R.J. Hillhouse wrote back in 2007 or 8, I think, the book Outsourced, talking about how the American intelligence apparatus was predominantly, not just largely, but predominantly 10 years ago, outsourced to these companies like Booz Allen Hamilton, for example, and the PMCs, the DefSec world. It's just another proxy. It's like watching the Alien movie, right, where the jaws keep coming out. You think you got it by the neck, and all of a sudden another set of jaws come out, and another set. It's kind of that, you know, these proxies. When Cover Black and Enrique Rick Prado left the CIA and said, hey, we're going to form a network of these functionaries that agencies can call into operation so that there's plausible deniability. You guys don't have to say it was your team that did it. You can use our people and no harm, no foul. So it's just another degree of separation. And always from British intelligence, you know. Jeanette Conant's book, The Irregulars, is a kind of a fun jaunt through the British intelligence network establishing the CIA on the roots of the OSS. Anyway, that's probably, you know, maybe that's a bit much, but hopefully not. Anyway, yeah. Charles, I appreciate your call. Thanks for your call. that was a lot of stuff. Anyway, let's go back to the phones real quick and grab Jim in Illinois. Jim, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Chris, friend, I'll try to be Jim. Quick about it.
Hey. Don't rush.
It's consumerism, brother. Consumerism.
Yeah.
And all these different
Merry
choices,
Christmas,
man.
To you, too. Just kidding.
Huh?
I said Merry Christmas to you, too. Just kidding.
Oh, yeah. Merry Christmas. Yeah. I had a wonderful Christmas. It was beautiful. White Christmas, man. It was like, wow, cool, man. It's kind of cold, but, you know, hey, that's where I live. So, you know, deal with it, baby.
Exactly.
So all these choices, you know, and it's like you're talking about that virus, you know. I wonder how P.T. Barnum would feel about the world as it is right at this time and how he would fit in with it. But I'm also reminded that when you lay down with dogs, you know, or sleep with dogs, you usually might get some fleas.
You might, so, for sure.
It's a good chance.
You can pretty much bet on it.
Yeah, and that goes to, entanglements and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Weren't
we warned about that?
I would say George Washington did make a mention of that, you know, I do believe.
Can I just
go ahead.
Add a parenthetical aside? I'm curious, you know, I mentioned Rebecca Heinrichs earlier, who is billed as a national security expert, and they're all the same, as you and I know.
Well, that's an absolute,
sorry.
But okay, I'll ride with that.
Tentatively. Well, I got a scratchy throat. I apologize. My
no
question,
problem.
Though, is these people who are billed on mainstream media as national security experts, for example, my conjecture would be that they basically operate in direct contravention to the founders' warnings, pretty much all of them across the board. What do you think?
Yeah, I would concur. Yeah. I might do something, it's kind of like if you're going to tell a real good lie, you give most of its truth, but then there's that point, whatever percent, that is just straight up, you know,
rat poison. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you know, it poisoned the whole well. Going on, I would say the exceptional administrator cares not about morals or ethics. As such, they don't present as impediment. He embraces Machiavelli's protocols. Like it or accept it not, the organic law memorialized for the United States of America guarantee that man will and shall be in a perpetual state of war with other men, persons of the administrative state. Men whom occupy the administrative state mechanisms over time are captured by corruption of greed and power. The creature of the state is and shall always be the enemy of life and property. The only check and balance are other men, the people whom by providence shall do that which is necessary and proper by law. Men, well-regulated militia, shall cause to be arrested men and persons outlaw and provide new guards for our future security. And that's the end of my quote there.
I appreciate it, as always.
Hey, no problem, man. I'm gonna bounce, man. Let somebody else come up, all right, Chris?
All right,
thanks, Jim. You're welcome.
You too.
Be well. Blessings of liberty.
Blessings of liberty to you, too. And in the true Orthodox sense, I would say, if there is such a thing. And I would say, again, Feliz Navidad, you know, translating literally, isn't it happy nativity? Isn't that the sentiment? Not Merry Christmas. There's nothing wrong with Christmas per se, and I talked about that a little bit on Road Warrior Radio last week, but happy nativity to me gets to the point of the reason for the season, in my humble opinion, not in a cult, you know, esoteric fashion, but in the true Christian peace on earth, goodwill toward men sense. I think that's a good thing. I think we could use a lot more of that. I'm going to hopefully focus on how to maybe work to better society, you know, one person at a time, one interaction or exchange at a time in the coming broadcasts, especially going into next year. It's, I think, sometimes a little easy to get hung up on the problems. And we definitely need to understand there's no denying the fact that if there's a minefield before you, it's good to know where the mines are before you start running across the field. That is suicide. But to become paralyzed by the possibility and prospects that lay before you because of the minefield is not wise either, perhaps. So, anyway, that's, I think, kind of the direction I hope to head in the coming year in terms of the Road Warrior Radio broadcast. Back to the subject of intelligence real quick. I mentioned Jeanette Conant's book. Well, let me just give you an excerpt from the preface of her book. The BSC, that is the British Security Coordination, which was the covert organization set up in New York by the British Secret Intelligence Service, the SIS, in May of 1940, to, you know, I mentioned the CIA as an outgrowth, really, of British intelligence from the sort of built on the restructuring, if you will, of the OSS. And this is one of the fun things we got out of the National Security Act. Not fun. CIA, DARPA, Joint Chiefs, DOD, all of those kinds of fun things that Ike warned us about in his farewell address. But I digress. So the BSC succeeded not only in mystifying and misdirecting its political enemies, but also in manipulating the policies of its greatest wartime ally in favor of England, changing the course of the United States forever. by pushing Roosevelt to create a transatlantic intelligence alliance in the form of the OSS to be headed by London's man in Washington, William Wild Bill Donovan, which, by the way, for whom, Julia Child worked, which is a fun story. A little bit of wine, perhaps, needed for that story. Anyway, to be headed by London's man in Washington, William Wild Bill Donovan, Stevenson effectually made the U.S. Intelligence Service the willing handmaiden of the British. Not surprisingly, this episode of history, which lay the foundation for the CIA, comes in many versions, with Stevenson and the BSC cast either as heroes or villains, depending on the author's ties to either the American or British intelligence establishments and the degree of moral discomfort with their devious activities and methods. Really, the bottom line is none of it is good. Again, this is sort of an outgrowth of what I was talking about before, the administrative state and the extra-constitutional usurpative efforts to create a supra-national construct that goes back really to that society that guys like John Dee and Francis Bacon talked about and wrote about, the folks who would see all and be seen by none. And after all, isn't that kind of what the intelligence world looks like these days? You know, the FBI saying, how dare you question us? We'll do whatever we want. When it doesn't answer questions from guys like Chuck Grassley, it's kind of weird, don't you think? I mean, could you get away with not answering questions? Yet when Chuck Grassley sends a letter to guys like James Comey, at the time the head of the FBI, and, you know, says, I want an answer by this date, and deadlines keep going by and going by with no response. Isn't that a bit odd? I think it is. I dare say if you didn't answer Chuck Grassley's letter, he'd probably sic the FBI on you. I wouldn't be surprised. But these are the interesting times in which we find ourselves. So none of this is okay. None of this should be the way it is, but I digress. Interesting, you know, to close today's broadcast, let me give you some of the headlines that you can find over at RBN. Interesting stuff. There are some headlines from last week that are very interesting too. A few entries from today: sign a contract, political correctness could destroy that. You know, you can read the rest for yourself. That's from RT. RT does some interesting reporting. Interesting how on point a lot of it is. And in contrast to a lot of the propaganda, even though RT is accused of being a propaganda outlet, which it is, but it's less disingenuous about its efforts to that extent, I would say, without getting into that. The entry titled "Former Facebook Executive Social Media is Ripping Society Apart" is interesting. That's been circulating, and that's Chamath Palihapitiya at his the Stanford talk that he gave back in November, and it's very shocking. If you haven't seen it, you have to watch that. It's a YouTube video, and it's much must-watch stuff. This is an excerpt. The YouTube video is titled "Former Facebook Executive Social Media is Ripping Society Apart." But what I'm trying to tell you is it's part of the talk that he gave back in November at Stanford Graduate School of Business. That video, published by the Stanford Graduate School of Business YouTube channel, is titled "Chamath Palihapitiya." Don't worry about it. Just get close. Founder and CEO, Social Capital, on money as an instrument of change. Trust me, if you get the rest of that, you'll get that. And he's been on Bloomberg Technology and CNBC and all kinds of other talk shows several times lately, saying the same thing, basically. You can find a number of sound bites, for example, on CNBC or Bloomberg that are 5 to 7 minutes long, and he's saying the same thing. Basically, the same thing that Jaron Lanier said. You know, we thought we were doing a good thing. Turns out this probably isn't a good thing. Chamath Palihapitiya says a number of provocative things in that entire 56-minute interview that, you know, he's one of those unimpeachable witnesses. He's a subject matter expert. Who's going to tell him he doesn't know what he's talking about? He was there. He was a part of the corporate leadership. He was a part of the, a driving force behind social networking in its current iteration, if you will. So like I said, that teaser that's posted, as I would call it, on Republic Broadcasting is a great kind of jumping off point. I mentioned last week too, you know, I'll say this, maybe this is I don't know, controversial or whatever. But is interesting, back on December 14th, Cook County Commissioner, and this is kind of what George was alluding to, I think, you know, the UN troops. Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin talked about meeting with UN officials in New York, Cook County, Illinois, Chicago area. Richard Boykin went to New York to meet with U.S. peacekeeping official or UN peacekeeping officials, and this network broke the story. As far as I know, in terms of alt media, basically, this network was kind of on top of that. 2 days later, the local media in Chicago, ABC, CBS affiliates and some others were talking about it, but in the broader coverage, this network down in Texas, I think, was one of the first, if not the first, to pick it up. And then, of course, other folks picked it up a few days later, and that was interesting. But you heard that here first, as far as I know, as far as the broader coverage is concerned. Is interesting that there is the, speaking of that, the same day, Saturday, December 16th, there was the post, Julian Assange just warned of a deep state coup meant to install Mike Pence as president. That was an interesting post, but it was perhaps made more interesting by the fact that over the weekend, Julian Assange's Twitter account disappeared for a little bit and then reappeared, but not until after the United States Navy Twitter account tweeted Julian Assange in quotes, which was weird, and that was deleted, but it's been captured and broadcast all over the internet too. Anyway, just some fun things. I hope it was informative. As I say, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Thanks to the network and John for letting me sit in. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.